testimony had so many fun, weird details that no one even followed up about, like how Cohen said that Trump inflated his net worth by $4 billion in an effort to buy the Buffalo Bills. You lied to buy the Bills? It's like using a fake ID to get into a Nickelback concert.
I just thought that was a needless...
Why the hate?
I don't know.
All those young men have dedicated their lives to crafting enjoyable faux rock music for young people.
I don't know why the hate. So how you doing? Good. Glad to hear it.
I've had my $10 million idea, by the way.
Awesome.
Finally, I can retire to the life of luxury I've so longed for.
Mm-hmm.
Coffee-flavored dish soap.
What?
So my travel mug, which I drink from every single day of my life, it's a fine Contigo model. Durable, accessible, leak-proof. Contigo for all your coffee swigging needs. What's really that, hoping for some free gear.
What's that brand I bought the other day, the super expensive brand?
I don't remember.
Everything hot or cold for like 2 days.
Yeti?
I got a Yeti coffee cup. It's like $30 or something. Yeah.
But anyway, so I finally washed it because the top was looking a little funky with the valve that you press and suck your coffee out of and all.
Funky, ow.
So I wash it and then I rinse it like forever and it still tastes like soap.
Hmm.
I mean, I've rinsed it and rinsed it and rinsed it. It's my second cup of coffee out of it. And it still just tastes like soap. And it dawned on me, coffee-flavored soap.
There you go. Be a huge
because you can't enjoy it if you think, wow, I wonder if there's some soap hidden in there or something. I wonder if there's a pocket of soap. I'm probably drinking soap. Is soap poisonous? Nah.
There you go.
Ugh.
Be on shelves by this Friday.
It's mine. Copyrighted.
I won't
take it. Don't steal
it. So NBC, Wall Street Journal work together for their polling. I don't understand why this happens for polls. It just does. NBC and Wall Street Journal are together. ABC works with the Washington Post. CBS works with, I don't know who they work with, somebody else. But NBC Wall Street Journal poll has Donald Trump at 46% job approval. That's the highest number he's had. He's up 3 since January. I was told all weekend long that he's had the worst month any president's had in modern history or something. But anyway, he's up 3. If you break it down by party or where he does the best, got about 90% of Republicans, which is higher than normal even. You might not know that, but generally in your own party, you're not even that high, and he's at 88%.
Seems perfectly clear to me why that is, too. It's resistance to the resistance.
That's exactly what it is.
You can be arguing with your spouse all day long, and if somebody comes to hurt your family, the two of you are united.
Steel bonds.
And that's what's happening. Republicans are, I've got friends who've stated this to me. Yeah, there's plenty about Trump that makes me pretty uncomfortable, but I've had enough of the media and the constant one-sided this and the blah, blah, blah. Blanket, I'm for Trump, they say to me.
I read an interview with Seth Meyers over the weekend in the New York Times, and their condensation, they're being condescending.
Condescending?
That's what I'm trying to say.
They're condensation.
They're moisturizing the outside of a beverage container?
Exactly.
None of those are the words I want.
A cold drink on a hot day, Sean.
Those aren't the words
that
I want.
It's a metaphor. No, they're condescending.
There you go.
Yeah.
The level of being condescending toward Trump and all Trump voters was just... And it was interesting because the article was about how they work so hard not to be. But they're so condescending that they were patronizing and condescending in their attempt not to be.
Right. It reminds me of Bill Maher, that monologue we played the other day in which he was trying to be understanding that the flyover states don't hate us. They want to be us. No. Oh, my gosh, you still don't get it.
And it was a lot of, they're so stupid, you have to walk very carefully and tread carefully because you don't want to offend the stupid. It was just like that.
Right.
Anyway, so yeah, what you just said is a lot of Trump support. It's just F you.
Yeah.
Definitely or probably would vote for Trump in 2020 at 41%. The Democrat contending is at 48%. These numbers always amuse me.
Is it the imaginary Democrat?
Yeah, because it's against a imaginary Democratic candidate. Well, he wouldn't have beaten an imaginary Democratic candidate, but he did beat Hillary Clinton.
Right.
And he still cannot beat an imaginary Democratic candidate, but he might beat whoever. You don't know.
The fact that it's single-digit points... That's that's an amazing statistic, just in the opposite direction.
That's a worse number by a lot than Obama had at this time. It's a better number than Clinton had, and they magically leave out George W. Bush because I'm guessing it was wouldn't have fit in with
the narrative. It's an odd oversight, since he was two presidents ago.
And a two-term president. So,
but listen, if you look, you think about every Democrat in the country and every moderate who's willing to vote Democrat, and each one of them gets to picture the Democrat they like the best.
I'm a Bernie person.
From Kamala Harris to Joe Biden, from Bernie to John Hickenlooper, who just got in from Colorado.
I've got his path to victory right here.
Do you?
Hickenlooper's path to victory.
Yep. How John Hickenlooper can win the 2020, just the Democratic nom, I guess, not the whole shebang.
But so you got all those Democrats moderate get to picture whoever they want in their little fantasies. Oh, I wish it was blank. And that imaginary multi-candidate beats Trump by how much?
48,
41?
Yeah. Seven.
That's 47, four, that's nothing.
A 7-point difference.
That's nothing.
I'm guessing that Bush would have had even a bigger hole and they left it out of here because it doesn't help the narrative of the story.
Right.
That's the only thing I can guess.
Right.
Why would you leave out? You go back to Clinton, but leave Bush out of this. Okay, whatever. Fine, I get what you're doing.
So see, this is why people are cynical.
Yes, it is. It is absolutely one of the reasons people will vote for Trump.
They're not trying to help you understand the world. They're trying to sway your opinion to one particular point of view.
But I thought this was interesting, and then I'll wrap up the poll stuff because, you know, we're 2 years away. What's the most popular presidential characteristics? You list characteristics in polls the best. Being African-American, a combined 87% of all voters say they're enthusiastic or comfortable with that characteristic. Fine. That's fantastic. As I said, when Barack Obama was running, and when Hillary Clinton was running, we're long past that. Being black would be a benefit to you. It wouldn't hold you back. Being a woman will get you more votes, not less, in our modern era.
Among people who actually vote, yes.
Any attempt to act like that's holding you back is just playing that game, I guess.
It's trying to increase turnout.
White man's at 86%, woman's at 84%, gay or lesbian is at 68%. That's up from 43 in 2006.
And these are enthusiastic or comfortable with.
Yeah. Voting for a person that's lesbian or gay has gone from 43% in 2006 to 68%. Man, that's a change quickly. What's the least popular characteristic?
Profoundly mentally ill.
Murderous.
Right. Dead.
The single least.
Big Bang Theory fan. The show, not the scientific.
Hey, get your own radio show for your jihad. Turn off his mic.
I couldn't vote for that person.
You know who I like? Sheldon.
The least popular thing you could have
for Secretary of Science.
As a characteristic is being a Muslim. 49%.
Obama! Right. Hank, give it up. The man's a private citizen now.
No, I'm sorry. This is backwards. This is backwards. They wrote this in a weird way. That's on the list of least popular, but that's at 49% or enthusiastic or comfortable. So you got, you know, over half that aren't. You go down the list because they've written it backwards. Socialism, just 18% of all Americans say they view a socialist as positively.
Wow. That's amazing. Compare that to college campuses and the nation's media.
Yeah, no kidding.
Boy, that's almost as egregious as the whole abortion thing, the way the media portrays it being wildly, wildly different than the vast majority of Americans.
If the media was going to do a good job, they would ask at least four candidates that have come out and said they embrace socialism. Today, it's according to an NBC Wall Street Journal poll, that's the least popular characteristic of any presidential candidate, and have them explain it.
Wow.
But they won't ask him that.
Wow.
That would be my guess.
That Muslim stuff is interesting. The anti-Semitic problem continues to grow for the Democratic Party in the U.S., the Labor Party in the U.K., as more and more Muslims join those parties and have either righteously, reasonably pro-Palestinian points of view and or just hate the Jew.
What?
Yeah.
That's a little strong.
Well, that's true. It's what they express. And, you know, that's going to be a challenge going forward.
This is a big concern to some people. The universe seems to be expanding at a faster rate than all cosmologists predicted.
What?
Yeah. I've adjusted my figures, and I think you should, too.
And some Trump from CPAC over the weekend, all coming up on the Armstrong and Getty Show.
Armstrong and Getty.
The conscience of the nation.
I should have saved the Pocahontas thing for another year. Because I've destroyed her political career and now I won't get a chance to run against her, and I would have loved it.
I thought that was a pretty funny angle and possibly true. He did in Pocahontas, Elizabeth Warren. She no longer has a war path to the nomination. See what I did there? And so he said he's got some other things that he's holding back so he doesn't take down some of the candidates he wants to run against.
So, Seth, with your condescending interview about how stupid Trump voters are and how we're trying not to condescend to them, which is difficult because they're little better than apes.
Racist apes.
The stuffed shirt, dignified, political speak, reserved politicians of days, weeks, and generations past, there's a huge chunk of America that's realized that all of their perfumed phrases, all of their gilded language and all, was designed to hoodwink the common people and to job us. Job America, to get what they wanted, not what they said they were going to get for us or do for us. That's it. You listen to Trump and is, oh, man, I shouldn't have blown all my good stuff on Pocahontas because it would have been great to run against her. That is not perfumed phrases and gilded speeches. It's just very regular guy. It's very straight talk. And yeah, I know Trump says all sorts of stuff that's not true. He can hardly tell you what the time of day it is without exaggerating, for instance. But that's a huge, huge part of it.
So Trump spoke for over 2 hours on Saturday at this big convention, conservative convention thing called CPAC that is supposedly important. And it was just a couple of years ago. They didn't want him to speak at all.
It's the Conservative Political Action Committee, Jack.
And now he is the rock star of all rock stars with a two-hour speech and nobody leaving the room and everybody cheering. This minute will give you an idea of the flavor of what the event was like.
I've learned, because with the fake news, if you tell a joke, if you're sarcastic, if you're having fun with the audience, if you're in live television with millions of people and 25,000 people in an arena, and if you say something like, Russia, please, if you can, get us Hillary Clinton's emails. Please, Russia, please. Please get us the emails. So everybody's having a good time. I'm laughing. We're all having fun. And then that fake CNN and others say, he asked Russia to go get the emails. Horrible.
I still see that conversation. I saw somebody over the weekend.
Joe Scarborough this morning pitching it. There was no way that was a joke. That was a...
That was the tip-off to the Russians that now is the time.
That was the sign. He let it slip that he was in league with Putin.
Oh, I saw that speech. It was hilarious. That was when all tens of thousands of Hillary's emails had disappeared and nobody could find them. And he said, hey, Russia, if you can find them, find them.
It was, well, that was a really good example, though, he gave. Really good example.
A number of people think you should pitch your chocolate flavored
coffee flavored
dish soap to Cramerica. Seems like the right corporation.
To
for
who?
Cramerica.
Oh, from the Seinfeld show.
And people who study the cosmos are concerned the universe seems to be expanding faster than expected. Astrophysicists are throwing together a hurried conference with new data that's out to try to explain why. They may have to rewrite the history of the cosmos on this information. They thought they had knew exactly how fast the universe was expanding, and all of a sudden it's going way faster and nobody knows why.
So if you're heading to Cygnus X1, pack a lunch. It's going to take you another half an hour.
Fill up with gas before you leave.
Right, exactly.
I don't know what it means, but it's. I read that and I thought, God, what if...
I'm telling you.
And then all
the blessing or bad thing?
All my what-ifs were, it doesn't matter. We would just all be atomized and it'd be gone and nothing would matter anymore.
There's a rest stop at Pluto, and it's kind of dirty and gross, but you got to stop there because the next stop is like 500,000 light years beyond that, and your kids are going to be crying. Stop at Pluto. Take my word.
Do you think you'd be happier if you understood all that stuff or less happy? Because I tried.
And if somebody knocks on your stall door, ignore it. All right?
Again, I was trying to read A Brief History of Time last week because a new anniversary edition is out, and I just do not understand it.
Not brief enough.
Just can't wrap my head around
a pamphlet on time.
Black holes and quarks and the going back in time and all this different sort of stuff. Just can't get there. I'd like to.
Yeah, I know. I me too. I think, boy, this would be such a great head trip, and I enjoy a good head trip. You know, a good read, a good wild possibility, a flight of imagination. I dig that stuff. But the, like, advanced physics, I can't. My brain doesn't work right. It's a shame, too.
What are you going to do?
Maybe I need a little more coffee, which will taste delicious in my clean, clean mug.
What's coming up in your news?
Joe Getty's coffee-flavored dish soap.
What's coming up in your news, Marshall Phillips?
Trump and Bernie drawing huge crowds already. Rand Paul challenging the president. And what is a movie these days? Yeah. Questions setting off quite a debate.
I saw Steven Spielberg weighing in on that. Yeah. There's a lot of heavyweights don't want Netflix in the game. And I can see why.
Oh, and we have another edition of Quaint Entertaining Yokel Theater, New York edition.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Fantastic. All coming up on the Armstrong and Getty Show. Reviewed the movie earlier, Leaving Neverland. I see it's getting attention on the early show and the Today Show up on the TV, and none of it's good news for Michael Jackson and the way people will see him for the rest of history.
Do we keep playing, we being America, the world, do we keep playing his music?
I don't know how you do.
Text us, 415-295-KFTC, or email mailbag@armstrongandgetty.com. Well,
why would you pull R. Kelly's movie and play Michael Jackson's movie?
Music?
Music, yeah. Is there a reason? Just Michael Jackson was that much bigger?
Well, let's have that chat at some point.
I'll never hear a Michael Jackson song again in my life without thinking about him being a child rapist.
And I can live a happy life without listening to the music.
Sure, of course.
There have been a lot of crazy artists whose art we like.
That's a decent point, too.
Historically speaking.
A lot of paintings hanging in museums with the real creepos who painted them.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Crazy people.
Let's get the news now with Marshall Phillips.
Well, President Trump on stage at CPAC for more than 2 hours is speechifying. We've been telling you on Saturday afternoon, Trump thrilling his supporters by announcing he was going to go off script, turning his attention to a whole host of topics, including free speech.
We believe in free speech, including online and including on campus. Today I'm proud to announce that I will be very soon signing an executive order requiring colleges and universities to support free speech if they want federal research dollars.
An idea that obviously hits my sweet spot, but really difficult to implement. We can talk about that at some point.
Well,
I love the principle.
Was that speech, like a lot of campaign speeches, was that about actually implementing any policy or just signaling to people I'm on the side, which is what almost all of campaigning is?
Well, it was clearly the latter. Whether it was the former as well, I don't know.
If you're a right-leaning Trump skeptic, you might be excited about this venture that's coming out soon. Jonah Goldberg, who we really like around here, is leaving National Review and teaming up with a man called Steve Hayes, who used to run the Weekly Standard. Huh? And they're going to have their own publication. which they say will be a reporting-driven Trump skeptical company that will start likely not until September, but they'll get the whole, you know, presidential election.
Jack, I was just corresponding with them about their new venture, and we look forward to chatting with them about it.
I like both of those guys, so that'll be something to see what kind of mark that leaves on the world. Back to you, Marshall.
In the race for the White House, a new poll shows President Trump's base is rallying around him. The NBC Wall Street Journal poll shows the president's got 46% approval rating among voters and within his own party, 90% approval. 90%
bing,
approval.
Bing, bong, bong, bing, bing, bing.
This is the Democrats step up their presidential campaigning. Senator Bernie Sanders firing up his supporters at a massive rally on Sunday at Chicago's Navy Pier. The Vermont senator saying he is going to be finishing a political revolution that he started.
We are gathered here tonight to complete the political revolution we started 3 years ago.
And the crowd goes wild.
Listen to that crowd. Yeah. Holy cow. There ain't nobody else other than Trump out there getting a crowd that sounds like that.
Don't sleep on my man John Hickenlooper. He's going to take the Democratic Party by storm. This former
you
beer
still
maker?
Got that, his path to a victory? You still got that
oh,
handy?
Oh, yeah.
Why
I
don't
got
you
his,
hang on to that?
He could
well,
win
we'll get back to you.
The 2020.
And as we learned with Obama and Trump, giant crowds that have enthusiasm matters. Hillary got her decent-sized crowds, and you could hear the clapping where they're supposed to clap. But that just passionate, whoa, we'll go to war for this guy that Bernie's got and Trump has, that's a thing it's not easy to get. Elizabeth Warren's not going to have that.
Yeah. I'm going to get Harris, me some passion.
I don't know if Kamala Harris is ever going to get that. Man, Bernie's got it.
Yeah, another Bernie clip. There's the crowd for you. And I guess it was freezing cold where they were.
The term revolution is overused.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It certainly is.
He certainly started a movement that almost all the candidates are on his side. So, yeah, he's the leader of that movement.
Republican Senator Rand Paul saying on Saturday night he will vote to block President Trump's national emergency declaration, which he made to get around Congress and reallocate other government funds in order to build a border wall. With Paul on the no side, there are now four Republican senators who say they'll vote against Trump's declaration. Now, even if they do pass it out of the Senate, there's not enough votes to override any possible presidential veto.
Yeah, there is that.
Yep. All right, what is a movie these days? Reports that Steven Spielberg intends to support rule changes that could block Netflix from Oscars eligibility have provoked a heated and unwieldy...
This is the best way to handle art, by the way, is if in like 1530 somebody decided, no, a painting has to be at least 8 inches by 15 inches.
Right.
A painting that it's any smaller than that does not count as a painting.
We'll call it a wainting.
But it will not be eligible for the Louvre or any of the other major
certainly
galleries.
Certainly not.
The debate has found the legendary filmmaker at odds with some industry heavyweights who have pointed out that Netflix has been an important supporter of minority filmmakers and stories.
Oh, well, is that it?
That aside, I like Steven Spielberg. Don't be on the wrong side of history, if I can use that phrase.
Oh,
I mean, come on now. The idea of a motion picture has got to be something that the older generation thought was a movie.
Right.
Come on.
It's got to be on a projector.
Yeah. Now, positive shot, I wanted to ask you about this. If you have a streaming movie, all you have to do to get it into the Oscars is to show it at a couple theaters around the country, right? During a certain time frame?
Yes. I don't know the exact how many screens it must be on, but that's something that Netflix has done in the past couple of years is do really small theatrical releases simply to check that box.
You can make whatever rules you want to make, Steven Spielberg or whoever else. People are going to watch what they like on whatever contraption they've got to watch it on, and they'll call it a movie if they desire to. You can't stop them.
Yeah, and E.T. was overrated. E.T.'s not overrated.
That's your news. I'm Marshall Phillips of the Armstrong and Getty Show. The conscience of the nation.
Phone home, E.T. Phone home. Turn on your heart light.
So, coast to coast, attention being paid to the decision not to charge Sacramento, California police in the shooting of Stephon Clark.
I read about it in the New York Times, 3,000 miles away.
Indeed, and we'll be talking to the chief of police, Sacramento, in a couple of minutes about the shooting, the aftermath, the protests,
and the
policies going forward.
Ruling over the weekend was what?
the police, not to charge the police.
The police didn't do anything wrong or illegal.
There will be no criminal charges filed against the police.
Okay. We'll see where that stands. More from Trump at CPAC throughout the show. I hope you can stay tuned. You're listening to the Armstrong and Getty Show.
Armstrong and Getty.
The conscience of the nation.
The Armstrong and Getty Show.
The show, more interesting stuff from that NBC Wall Street Journal poll that's out. Also, I got some numbers on people and cars and what they pay and what a monthly payments are. That's pretty pretty eye-opening, but I hope you can stick around.
And more highlights from the wacky CPAC speech by the president as well. So on a much more serious topic, the shooting of Stephon Clark, 22-year-old black man in Sacramento, about a year ago, attracted a fair amount of attention nationwide, and the district attorney of Sacramento County just announced on Saturday, I believe, that there would be no charges filed against the officers involved in the shooting. There have been protests and a great deal of reaction, as you might expect. And to discuss the whole story, Chief Daniel Hahn of the Sacramento Police Department joins us. Chief, we appreciate you being here. Very much.
Thank you for having me.
So, listen, we're not knee-jerk anything around here, as you know. We support police strongly. At the same time, the taking of the life of a citizen of a free country is an incredibly serious thing, particularly without a trial, and societies need to be very, very careful about that. Having said that, well, why don't you just tell us, what was your reaction to the DA's announcement Saturday? No charges.
Well, even before she went, I knew that it wouldn't change certain things no matter what the decision was. And first and foremost, the pain that the family feels because they've lost a son, a grandson. No decision is going to change that or the challenges that face our city and our police department. But I'm also glad that another step in the process has come and there's a few more steps to go. So it means we're progressing through what our process is.
Has the department come to a position, a decision, on the actions of the officers that night?
We're still in that process. So we did the first step in that. That is a high-level overview look at our organizational performance during that call. And that's where things like the new foot pursuit policy came from, the modifications to the body camera policy, and a few other things. And the last step in the final part of that internal review is after we get the results from the district attorney and the attorney general in this case. And so the attorney general has not given his decision and results. And so after that, we can then move on to our final review.
Was there a problem with the department's foot pursuit policy before?
Well, we didn't have a foot pursuit policy, so now we do.
Interesting. Broad outlines of it?
Yeah, it mirrors basically our vehicle pursuit policy that gives direction to our officers on the things that they have to take into consideration before they either initiate a foot pursuit or continue a foot pursuit or cancel a foot pursuit. And so it's very similar to our vehicle pursuit policy.
Interesting. How about the protests so far? I know there's been some unrest. A mall was closed, that sort of thing. How out of hand has it gotten?
Well, it's I think it's gone as good as can be expected at this point. We were prepared, obviously, for any number of things. The mall closing is up to the mall ownership. They're the ones that decided to close the mall. So there's been a few small protests, but there's not been any violence. There's not been any real significant property damage. So that's a very good thing.
Chief Daniel Hahn of the Sacramento Police Department is with us. The DA in her press conference, and I know you don't work for the DA, you work for the police department, but she talked about a number of things, including the drugs in the young man's system, the fact that he was there had been a domestic violence complaint about him, that sort of thing. And the family's pretty angry about that, saying it was just character assassination. Why was that part of the press conference? I mean, I know the answer to that, but from your point of view.
Yeah, well, you'd have to ask the district attorney why she put it in part of the press conference. But I will say this. Those are all facts that were part of the investigation. And so my understanding is she put it in as part of her press conference, because those are the some of the factors that went into her decision-making process. So she's being transparent and telling people what her decision was and how she came to that decision.
Right. And listen, it's frustrated me a little bit because the family is aggrieved and they're angry and the rest of it, and they and the district attorney are talking past each other. The reason that was in the press conference was she was explaining why it would be extremely difficult, even if charges were filed, to get a conviction. Because, you know, obviously the defense would be he was an agitated young man who is prone to committing crimes and he was on a whole bunch of drugs and behaving erratically. And so it would be very, very difficult to prove to a jury beyond a reasonable doubt that the cops were just completely out of control and they weren't legitimately afraid for their lives because of the way the young man was acting. And, you know, I don't know if it's willful not wanting to recognize that on the part of the family or what, but I just, like I said, it's frustrating because people are legitimately angry and grief-stricken, and the communication doesn't seem to be great.
Well, and I've said this before, on this case and any others that will come in the future, there's been more transparency from this department than ever before, and it's not even close. But transparency by itself doesn't get to the core of the issue that our community is concerned about and that we are concerned about as a police department. And transparency is not always pretty. There are challenges to transparency because some stuff is just graphic and just, you know, it causes people a lot of pain. So there are consequences to transparency.
Yeah, that's well said. It is the other side of that coin. Well, we appreciate you being willing to talk. I think it's notable. We've talked about this with you on a couple of different occasions that you guys have not hunkered down, as you say, and, you know, committed transparency. Chief Daniel Hahn, Sacramento Police Department, we appreciate the time.
Thank you for having me.
Good to talk to you. Thank you.
And I suppose it should be pointed out yet another police chief in America that is not a white male, because that is a, you know, popular slogan of rallies and campaigns and t-shirts,
mm-hmm.
that we have white police officers gunning down black men all over the place. And
right.
Hey, Hanson, can you? Michael Hanson?
Yeah, go ahead, Chief.
Go ahead.
Thanks. We appreciate your time. Thanks. Yeah. You know, it's like I said, it's tough to watch all this unfold because I get the pain and the, in, you know, the family, honestly, most of the family of Stephon Clark has been, most of the family, more than reasonable and patient and the rest of it, but were outraged at some of the things disclosed by the district attorney. But, you know, transparency is transparency.
We got this text. The police will just stop patrolling these areas with this kind of crap happens in the future. There's no requirement that you do.
Yeah.
I wonder if that... Well, that has happened in some cities. We do know that.
Well, I have it on reasonably good authority from various law enforcement officers that if the risk is too enormous, not only like the legal risk, but the risk to life and limb, because you have to be passive. Like in Baltimore, this was a big story. When there was the outrage over some people dying in custody in Baltimore, the police felt so cowed into inaction that it became impossible to police the dangerous neighborhoods. I'm not saying they were right in that perception or they followed the right strategy, but it's one of those things in society that is so hard. Finding the sweet spot between assertiveness and caution and respect by coppers in dangerous neighborhoods. You can't be a kitty cat in these neighborhoods. You can't be too passive and what's the right word? I'm choosing my words very carefully here because people dying is no joke. But obviously, you can't be belligerent and violent either. Unnecessarily violent. So it's a really difficult thing. I tell you what, I think Chief Hahn is a hell of a good man, though, and they are serious about helping their officers understand what the policies are and what the right practices are to get bad guys into custody and keeping everybody safe. So,
trying to go through my notes from the weekend of stories I wanted to bring up. I tweeted this out that as I was looking for a TV show on Saturday, I came across on one channel, they had a show called Larry King's Prostate Report. I don't know what that show is. Is it just
a... It's got to be a little difficult to generate new storylines every week. I'm assuming it's a weekly. Tell me, and it's not daily. My prostate is enlarged.
Omaha.
Stay with us.
Question for my prostate.
Larry King's prostate report.
It's the 50-year anniversary this week of the penning of The Godfather, one of the most popular books in publishing history, and also, of course, a very popular movie. Which set me to reading a little bit of that. I'd never read any of The Godfather. You ever read any of The Godfather? It's freaking fantastic.
You know, I think I had a copy at one point, but I never read it. I had a dog-eared paperback I picked up at a garage sale.
He was a failing writer.
Mario Puzo, right?
Mario Puzo. He was a failing writer, and somebody said to him, you know, we're in debt. His wife said, we're in debt. We got to do something. You know something about mafia? Write a mafia book. And he just sat down and started writing.
A mafia book? What good would that do?
He kind of felt like the book was beneath him a little, so he just kind of got some crap out there really fast.
Yeah.
And the publishing company said, this is fantastic. And gave him a huge advance, and off he went.
Wow.
And it was, at the time, the fastest-selling big hit book in the history of publishing. When it hit, it was just a huge, crazy success.
Wow, it's like J.K. Rowling.
Yeah, it was like
monsters.
It was like Harry Potter was, yeah, that sort of thing.
So here's one thing I don't know. Were there multiple books, like the multiple movies, or the multiple movies just the book told in three chunks?
I think it's that. I think it's just the book was a whole bunch of different stories. There are characters in the book that aren't in the movie.
Sure.
Kind of makes it kind of exciting.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you liked the Godfather stuff.
Huh.
We got more to delve in throughout the radio program of Trump's the longest speech in any president has ever given. Two plus hours at CPAC on Saturday.
Wow!
And most of it ad-libbed. Which is just...
It's a bad idea. And yet, hilarious.
Well, he's got a 90% approval rating among the crowd he was speaking to. So.
All right, I demand more highlights.
Seems to be working for him. Among other things coming up, hope you can stay with us. You're listening to the Armstrong and Getty Show.